The name of the parasha is Vayishlach, sponsored by friends of David Wicksell in his memory, Lilui Nishmat David Ben Mordechai Shmuel Zal. Yaakov, this is the story. This parasha tells the story of Yaakov coming back to Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov was in Padan Aram, and a lot of interesting things happened to him there, in Chutz La'aretz. He was married, he had wives, he had children, he had flocks. I mean, it's a very interesting story. Not a story that is entirely understandable, but it's an interesting story. And then he comes back to Eretz Yisrael. When he comes back to Eretz Yisrael, he meets up with his brother, who comes with a small army, and they are antagonistic. But somehow it works out that Yaakov is able to stay and that Esav departs, you know, leaves the place of the confrontation, and Yaakov kind of proceeds. So that's where we're starting. We're starting to look at the parasha when the confrontation is over. So in the first source, it says, Perek Lamed Gimel, Vayashov Vayomahu Esav, Lidarko Seira. Esav goes away. He goes away. Lidarko Seira. Seira is. There's a sheet someplace. Oh, hi. Anyway, Esav leaves the story. He's no longer in the story. And Yaakov is alone, right, coming back to Eretz Yisrael. So, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Let's look at the Rashi. Vayashov Vayomahu Esav Lidarko. Esav Livado V'Abamot Ishalchu Imo Nishmitu Me'etzlo Echad Echad. So Rashi takes note of the fact that even though 400 people came with Esav, Esav seems to be leaving on his own. Right, he's leaving alone. Nishmitu me'etzlo echad echad. They kind of fell away. There was no war. There was no battle. And Esav came with an army, but he left alone. The army had no purposes. And then there's a medrash, which I don't want to get into. Right, heichad para lahem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'mei David. David was fighting against Amalek. Shne'emar ki im arba meot ish, Nar Asher Echbu al Hagmalim, that there were 400 people on the side of Amalek. So there's some kind of comparison here, which we can't get into. But Rashi tells us this, and you have to remember it. But I want to go on with Yaakov. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Yaakov Nasa Sukkota. Yaakov went to a place called Sukkot. Yaakov Nasa Sukkota. Vayiven lo bayit. Ulemiknehu asa sukkot. So, and he built himself a house. This is the pasuk in the Chumash. I mean, everybody looks like querulous, like you've never heard of this pasuk, but it's there. It's been there for years, right? So Yaakov again. Like, what's the scene? Yaakov and Esav confronting. Somehow that confrontation ended. Remember, Yaakov fought with the angel, and he hurt his leg, and all these kind of stories. And then Esav rides off into the dust. Now, Yaakov is left. So he goes to a place that we don't know about. Right? But Yaakov nasa Sukkota. He went to a place called Sukkot. Vayiven lo bayit. Bayit sounds like something permanent. Sukkah is usually something that has something for shade. That's sukkah. The Gemara says al shem haschach. It's the thing that covers you. What you want when you build a sukkah is that you want shade. You want shade. You know that the laborers out in the field, if you ever see the people. Let's take a tour to see people work. Like, now it's all digital and computers, right? There's nobody who works anymore.
There are.
You know, Bank Leumi, they fired 700 people because they replace them by machines. Okay, so but if you ever see people working out in the field, you know, or you can see a movie of people working, so they usually, they need a place with shade, because you can't just stay out in the sun all the time. So that's a sukkah. That's a sukkah. A halachic sukkah is curious because it demands defanot, walls. Right? A non-halachic sukkah, the kind of sukkah you find out in the field, usually has schach, but no defanot. Right? Does not have defanot. So he says, "Vayivin lo bayit uvnei uasas sukkot al ken kara shema makom sukkot," because he built a lot of sukkot for his flocks. They named it sukkot. So even though it says in the pasuk the Yaakov nasa sukkota, it's like deja vu, like the pasuk was written or the formulation was made after Yaakov did whatever he did in this place that he went to, which he named eventually Sukkot. What does Rashi say? Vayiven lo bayit, shayasham shmona asar chodesh. He was there 18 months. Kayetz v'chorev v'kayetz. Right? Sukkot kayetz, bayit chorev, Sukkot kayetz. And you assume each part of the year is a half a year. So he went for, okay? So there we have a story. I mean, this story doesn't relate to anything that we know about him. I mean, who cares that he was in Sukkot, that he built Sukkot, that he had flocks, that he put them in the shade? I mean, what has this got to do with the exalted notion of learning Torah? Right? Certainly, we're like left. It's the question is a question. Pasuk Yudchet, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. And here we have Yaakov. Two things we say about Yaakov: Shalem and Vayavo Ir Shechem. Right? He is Shalem and he came to Shechem. Let's just look at the Rashi before we speculate. Shalom. Shalem, sorry. You see Pasuk Yudchet in the Rashi? Shalem Begufo Shenitrape Mitzliato. He was cured somehow. He stopped limping. He got to wherever he was going to. In this case, it's Shechem, and he no longer is limping. Shalem b'mamano, shelocha seklu mikol oto doran. You see, he never gave all that stuff to Esav that he prepared. Remember, he prepared himself with tefillah, with doron, and with milchama. That's how he prepared himself for Esav. So he had all this stuff, you know, like wrapped up. His presents and stuff, and wrapped up a nice presentation. He never gave it to him. So he was shalem b'mamono. He still had all the money that he came.
All the stuff
he came with.
The stuff he sent in advance.
No. He had prepared it. He prepared himself to give Esav a payoff in exchange for him not attacking him. Right? You know, as he said, you know, tefillah, doron, milchama. He prepared himself, but he never gave him anything. There's no pasuk that says he gave him anything. So he was shalem b'mamono. That's what Rashi said.
Wasn't that the flocks?
What?
That's what I thought. It's the flocks.
So couldn't you say that Rashi is saying that he gave them all the animals, and lo chaser, meaning that since a year elapsed during that, maybe there was enough procreation among his own flock that they made up for the loss?
Okay, could be.
Yeah.
It could be that somehow. But the point is that he didn't give them anything. Either he gave him and he got it back, or he right. gave him and it to his grow on the spot or something, but he didn't lose anything on the deal. He was shalem. He had as much as he had before, and then shalem b'torato. This is a new one. Right? That we know about tefillah, doron, and milchama. But here Rashi says, Rashi is publicizing an event that we never heard about. Shalem b'torato, shelo shechach talmudo b'beit lavan. So that this idea of shalem is not only about his relationship to Esav. It's about the life of Yaakov. That Yaakov comes back to Eretz Yisrael, like you say, like who is Yaakov? I mean, it's like if somebody asked that question, who is Yaakov? Well, Yaakov was the son of Yitzchak, who was the son of Abraham. So what was it that made Yaakov the son of Yitzchak? What was it that made Yaakov the son of Avraham? So the only answer that we could conjure up is Torah. Torah, that doesn't necessarily mean Chamisha Chumshei Torah and Rashi, but it means that just like the Chazal say that the Avot kept all the mitzvot, they knew what God wanted, or they intuited how it was supposed to be. So all of those possibilities are called Torah. All of that is called Torah. So Rashi says, Shalem b'torato, shelo shachta mudo bebeit lavan. This has nothing to do with Esav, but this has to do with Shalem. Like, when is a person of a person Shalem? When is a person Shalem? Shelo shachach. Now, this is really abnormal, because if you remember that the idea of memory, I think we've talked about it, the idea of memory connected to Torah is a very significant idea. And that the Torah itself emphasizes again and again that you should not forget the Torah that you learned. That not learning Torah is bad. And forgetting Torah, it sounds like, is worse. So I say, who was Yaakov Avinu? Like, what was it that Yaakov Avinu accomplished in his life until then, which is remarkable and noteworthy? It was not that he was rich, and it was not that he escaped the clutches of Esav, because those things are irrelevant to us. What does it matter to us what happened to Esav? But the idea to Yaakov, the idea that Yaakov escaped shichicha, he escaped the scourge of forgetfulness, that's very remarkable. That's very remarkable. We didn't say that. No one said that about Abraham, and no one said that about Yitzchak. The Rashi says it only about Yaakov, and that really the purpose of the word Shalem is to tell us this. It tells this idea. Because the fact that he limped or he didn't limp, or he limped and that he got better, I mean, like, what do we get from that? What do we inherit? What idea is contained in that? The fact that he had as much money now as he had when he left Padan Aram, okay, that's also great. But he had a little more, a little less. I mean, what difference does it make to us? But that he overwhelmed the problem of shikicha, that is an interesting and exciting idea. Shelo shachach talmudo beveit lavan. That all the time he was in the house of Lavan, he did not forget any of the Torah that he learned. And in this way, Rashi distinguishes Yaakov. And you know that in the Kabbalah, Avraham is Chesed, and Yitzchak is Gvura, and Yaakov is Tiferet. And Tiferet is Torah. Tiferet is Torah. Somehow, Esav became Torah. Somehow Yaakov became Torah. Yes? Yaakov became Torah. So here he is. Here's Rashi. Rashi made Yaakov an Ish HaTorah. And what is it that made Yaakov an Ish HaTorah? Shelo shachach. He didn't forget anything that he learned. And that becomes a challenge. That becomes a challenge, an ongoing challenge, right? Why I don't like Daf Yomi. Because for me, learning Daf Yomi is more or less like forgetting as you do it. You know, it's like automatic forgetting machine. And forgetting is a bad thing. Forgetting is a bad thing. And everybody can remember a little more. Like if you go over it, you know, the Gemara says that if you go over it 100 times, it'll be better the 101st time. So people, well, today we don't have patience for that, but it's probably true. Very true, that the more you review, the more you know, and you don't have time for that if you do that for Yomi. So then, after that, after Shalem, right, Yaakov Shalem, he came to Ir Shechem. He came to Ir Shechem. Kimo La'ir, Rashi says, to the city called Shechem. So, what do you mean he came to the city of Shechem? So this, I can't avoid thinking, if you look at the third source on the page, right? The third source on the page, Bereshit Perek Yud Bet. Vayikach Avram et Sarai Ishto. This is the beginning of Lech Lecha. The beginning of Lech Lecha. Vayikach Avram et Sarai Ishto et Lot ben Achiv et Kol Nechusham Asher Achshu. Here's Avraham. He's got his family with him. And he has his rechush, Asher Kol Nechusham, right? The emphasis, all of his property, all of his riches, Asher Achshu. Now this is very hard to avoid the comparison between Abraham and Yaakov, right? Abraham, family, money, directive, going to Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov, he has his family, right? His wives, his children, his money, and his Torah. And he's on his way. He's on his way someplace, right? They go to Eretz Arza Kenan. Pasuk Vav, Vayavor Avram be'Eretz Ad Mikom Shechem. So there you have it. Avraham, the first thing he did when he came to Eretz Yisrael was to go to Shechem. Now Yaakov, it is true, does not go directly to Shechem. He makes a stopover, stopover. He stops in a place which is eventually called Sukkot, but a place that was no place, because before he was there, it didn't have a name. And if he didn't have a name, it didn't really exist. So if you have flocks and family and this, and you're used to kind of a Bedouin type of lifestyle, so you set yourself up someplace. And you do. So he did it. He did it for 18 months. He did that for 18 months until he moved on to a real place. And the name of the real place was Shechem. So it seems to me that comparing Avram Avinu coming to Eretz Yisrael and Yaakov coming back to Eretz Yisrael, comparing the two of them, is reasonable. It's a very reasonable kind of thing. So also it's very reasonable. Just one second. Ad Makom Shechem. You see, by Pasuk Vav in the Rashi. Let's look at the Rashi. Pasuk Vav in the Rashi. It's under the Chumash, right? Under the Psukim is Rashi. Vayavar Avram ba'aretz nichnas l'tocha. He went into Eretz Yisrael, Avram Avinu, ad mikom Shechem, litpalel al b'nei Yaakov tshiyavo lilachem b'Shechem. To daven for the sons of Yaakov that are going to have to do a battle. Remember the story that Dina was got into trouble with in Shechem, and her brothers Shimon v'Levi fought against the Shechemites after they agreed to circumcise themselves, and that battle itself was problematic, because Yaakov, the father of Shimon v'Levi, was against them going to do battle against the people in Shechem. But here Rashi is concerned about this question. Why did Avram Avinu go to Shechem? Why didn't Avram Avinu go to Yerushalayim? Why didn't he go to Ir HaYevusi? Why didn't he go to Har HaMoriah? What Shechem? Why go to Shechem? So Rashi created an operative need for Avram Avinu going to Shechem. Right, and that need was that Avraham Avinu perceived, understood, knew, prophesied that there would be a problem for the children of his children, the children of the children of the children, Yaakov's children. There would be a problem in Shechem, and there would be a battle that would be fought. So Avraham Avinu went to daven for the children of the children of the children who would do battle in Shechem. Now that leads us to think, what is he davening for exactly? What is he davening for exactly? He's davening, I guess, that they should not be, that they should win, that they should you know, I mean, Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov, his grandson, was against them. Did not want them to go and do what they did in Shechem. And here's Avram Avinu fighting on their behalf. So this problem of what meaning is there in what the Avot do is taken up by the Ramban in three different places. The Ramban, in his introduction to the Peirush on the Torah, the Ramban wrote a very long introduction that is printed in all the Chumashim, Mikraot, Gedolot, and in the editions of the Ramban. In it's an introduction to the Torah, really. To what is the Torah? And in the introduction to the Torah, he asks that question. Now Rashi, the beginning of his Peirush on Bereishit, Rashi asked the question, how come the Torah doesn't start with mitzvot? Why should the Torah start with theology or philosophy or ideology and the formation of Am Yisrael? After all, what the generations need is the mitzvot. That's what God wants of us. So why doesn't the Torah start, this is Rashi, why does the Torah start from HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, the first mitzvah that was given to B'nai Yisrael as a community? Now, even though it is true that according to the Rambam, just thinking, right? So I'm mentioning things. The Rambam says that we don't keep mitzvot because they're written in the Torah. We keep mitzvot because they were taught to us at Har Sinai. So that even though there's a mitzvah of pru urvu, right, to be fruitful and multiply in the parashah of Bereishit, that for us is not a mitzvah. Even though Avram Avinu and his children and the people in his camp all were circumcised, we don't circumcise our children because of the fact that Avram Avinu circumcised his family. We circumcise the children because it's a mitzvah it's in the Torah. B'yom ha-shmini yimol b'sar orlato. That's why we do it. And mitzvot come from Sinai. So sometimes there's what looks like a mitzvah in the Torah that comes before Har Sinai, and then it has to be repeated at Sinai in order for it to be a bona fide mitzvah. It has to be repeated. That's what we understand. So the Ramban says, in spite of the fact that we don't really learn mitzvot from the Torah of the Book of Bereishit, nevertheless, we might learn hanhagot tavot, the way to be, the way what we call that today, maybe morality or ethics, which in our times, in our generation, is like really problematic. I mean, things that for many years were considered to be, by most people or by many people, to be the proper way to do things, you know, all called into question today. And it's very difficult for a lot of people to determine for themselves what they should do in a particular case. But the Ramban said, look, if Avram Avinu practiced Hastasat Orchim, if he invited the three angels, you know, who were hanging around, said, come on in, even though I'm in pain and I'm sick, I mean, come, I want to honor you and give you a place in my home and feed you. So we learned something from that, the Ramban said. It's not so much the mitzvah of Hachnasat Orchim, but it's the kind of style, the way you do it, and the alacrity with which Avram Avinu and the other Avot fulfilled the divine command. So that's what the Ramban says in the Hakdama. Of course, the actual amount of material that you could glean that is moral and ethical in value is very small compared to the number of psukim in the book of Bereishit. I mean, there are a lot of stories in the book of Bereishit. And it remains unclear what you need all of that material for if what we were interested in learning is, you know, like an ethical way of doing things or a respectful way of addressing an issue. That's the Ramban in the Hakdama. Now, the Ramban also wrote, he wrote a long drasha called Torat Hashem Tmima. That's what it's called. A long, it's like a, what would I call it in English? It's like another way. It's a drasha about Torah, just like the introduction to his commentary on the Chumash is about the Torah. This is a separate little pamphlet that he wrote, also about the Torah. But there he says something else. There he says something else. He says that one of the things that you have to recognize about God, that we are kind of directed to recognize about God, is that God created the world. Now, of course, this is problematic. I mean, how am I supposed to know that God created the world? After all, I wasn't there. So the way that I know that God created the world is because the Torah told me, says Bereishit bara Elokim et hashamayim v'ha'aretz, the Torah says that God created the world. But the Ramban adds to that, that there's an independent source of knowledge that God created the world. And that independent source of knowledge is Noach. The Ramban says, I mean, I think it's very interesting, but we just can't get into it right now. But it says Noach. Why Noach? Because God destroyed the world with the flood. Right? But then the world recovered. The waters receded. And Noach went out and he planted and he did and he acted and he acted well, he acted poorly. But he was there at the creation of the world. He was there at the creation of the world. Now Noach knew Avram Avinu somehow, according to Chazal. So that means that the knowledge that God created the world really comes from Noach, was passed down from Noach into the Avot, so that we can know that God created the world, according to the Ramban, just like we know anything else. You know, the things that somebody tells us, somebody who was there tells us, somebody who was there passes it down from the family, father to son to father to son. That's how we know. That's the second source for the Ramban. The third source of the Ramban is this Ramban that we're going to look at right now. What does the Ramban say? You see, Vayavor Avram Ba'aretz Ad Mekom Shechem. You see the Ramban? Omar Lecha Klal. The Ramban says, I want to tell you a rule of interpretation, exegesis. Tavin Oto Bekol HaParshiyot HaBa'ot Be'inyan Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. I'm going to tell you something which will enable you to understand why there are avot. Like, what do we need avot for? Why can't we just start Jewish history from Moshe Rabbeinu? I mean, after all, Moshe Rabbeinu took us out of Egypt, brought us to Har Sinai, we got the Torah. That seems like a good beginning. What do we have to know about the difficulties that Avram Avinu had in Chutz Laaretz, how he got to Eretz Yisrael, and the naivete of Yitzchak, and the renewed efforts of Yaakov to come back to Eretz Yisrael? What do we have to know all that for? What does it mean? What does it matter? Why not just start, we just make the beginning at a different place? We'll make the beginning at Moshe Rabbeinu, Limashal. The Ramban doesn't say that, but that's what I think he means. It means you know, how do you know when the beginning is? I mean, the beginning should be valuable. It should give you something. What do we get from Avram Yisrael? Yeah, okay, they were tzaddikim, they were good people, they were this, and they did nice things, but Am Yisrael, the story of Am Yisrael, just like the first mitzvah, oh, that's what I wanted to tell you, but the first mitzvah, Rashi says, it's a chodesh hazeh lachem, kiddush hachodesh, right? But it's really not a mitzvah because it's before Matan Torah, according to the Rambam. So okay, so you have to think about that. But there's no doubt that Matan Torah, that Har Sinai. That's the main thing. That's the main part of the story. What is Avraham, how did Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov get into the story at all? So listen to what he has to say. He says, "V'hu inyan gadol." This is a big deal. Iskiruhu rabotenu b'derech tzara. It's mentioned in Chazal, but it's mentioned in a kind of brief statement. And what is that brief statement? V'amru. It's quoted here in the Tanchuma, in Lech Lecha. Kol ma she'ira la'avot, siman lebanim. Kol ma she'ira la'avot, siman lebanim. V'lachein yarichu haktuvim b'sipur ha'masa'ot. Therefore, the psukim written in the Torah will speak at length about the trips that they took, chafirat ha'be'erot, digging wells that they did, u'sha'ar ha'mikrim. It was what the Ramban is saying. Without this principle that ma'aseh avot siman lebanim, you have a lot of stories in the Torah that are trivial, that are totally unimportant. And he points in fact to Masa'ot, Sipur Masa'ot, the trips that Avraham went from here to there, and Yitzchak went from there to here, and they went to Egypt, they came back from Egypt with the land of Plishtim, they came back to the land of Plishtim. Okay, and if we didn't know that, we would be bad people. We wouldn't recognize our obligations. I mean, what difference does it make? What difference does it make that Avram had trouble with wells, and had trouble with Lot, and he had trouble, and Yitzchak had troubles with the wells, and Yaakov couldn't get along with his brother? I mean, all of this is totally unnecessary. It's totally unnecessary facing the obligations of mitzvot. So the Ramban says, Shar HaMikrim. You see, Shar HaMikrim, the Hebrew word mikre, means accident. Like philosophical term. An accident is something that happens unplanned, not by design. Not that, you know, things happen all the time. Like it rains sometimes, so it doesn't rain. That's called a mikre. So he says, Shar HaMikrim. Shar HaMikrim, Abraham. Abraham didn't get along with Lot. Avram went to chase after Lot to get him back, to free him. I mean, all of these are mikrim. V'yachshov ha'choshev b'hem, kilu hem divarim miyutarim, ein b'hem to'elet. And if you think on it, the Ramban says, you would come to the conclusion that these things have no purpose. These stories. I mean, why do I have to know what happened? Why do I have to know what Avraham Avinu did? Why do I have to know every time Avraham Avinu built a Mizbeach? Does that something do with me? Am I going to build a Mizbeach? Am I going to sacrifice? I mean, Avraham Avinu didn't sacrifice, but am I going to think about it? Let's say Akedat Yitzchak, you know, great drama. I mean, you know, we substitute sometimes drama for meaning. So there's a drama. What if I didn't have Akedat Yitzchak, so the rabbis wouldn't have drashot on Rosh Hashanah? They wouldn't have anything to say. I mean, it's asur. You're not allowed to kill another person. And you're certainly not allowed to sacrifice another person. And you're alachat kama v'kama, not allowed to sacrifice your son. I mean, what kind of question is that? So what difference would it make to me if I knew the story or I didn't know the story? So that's what the Ramban says. Hem tvarim yutarim ein b'hem to'elet. That's what a person would think, that these stories are extraneous and have no particular purpose. I don't need Akedat Yitzchak to know that it's osur. I go on the street and take it to find a 10-year-old kid and say, "Are you allowed to sacrifice your brother?" And I imagine he'll say no, right? Unless he's a wise guy. But today everybody's a wise guy, so you have to ask him another time. So then he'll say no. So that's called that the Ramban says. The Ramban says miyutarim ein b'hem to'elet, ein b'hem to'elet. And so now he gives the answer. He says kulam ba'em lelameid al ha'atid. They all come to all these stories come to teach me about the future. Ki kasher yavo hamikre lenavi mishloshet haavot yitbonen mimenu hadavar hanigzar lavo lizaro. That whenever something happens to one of the avot, what makes the avot avot? Not because they were biologically several generations before. What makes them avot is they become prototypes for the creation of a nation. In other words, if you could say that the nation that was ultimately created had certain characteristics, features, was different, like the nation of B'nai Yisrael was different than other nations in certain regard. Right? In certain regard, like the Gemara says that people, Jews, are not easily. The Gemara says it, but I'm trying to figure out a way to say it so it sounds reasonable. That they don't get angry easily. Not everybody knows Jews who get angry, but that's what the Gemara says, and the Rambam paskens la halacha that the Jews don't easily get angry. You know that they have a characteristic. In fact, the Rambam says, you know, if somebody suggests a shidduch, he doesn't use that word. If somebody suggests a shidduch, and then you go, the kala, the suggested kala, goes to the house of her suggested in-laws, and they're all fighting and yelling and screaming at each other. So the rabbi says, "Stay away, because they're probably not Jewish." So there's a characteristic that defines the nature of the people. And that characteristic became part of the genetic makeup of Am Yisrael through the Avot, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And that's what the Ramban says. Ki kasher yavo amikre lenavi mishloshet haavot yitbonen mimenu adavar nigzar lavo lizar. Oh, so when a Navi learns about what happened to the Avot, the Navi is able to interpret that this is going to happen to his generations. Okay, now I want you to skip to six lines from the bottom, Lefikach. You see six lines from the bottom, middle of the line, Lefikach hezik HaKadosh Baruch Hu et Abraham Ba'aretz. Therefore, God insisted that Avram Avinu should be in Eretz Yisrael. Right? Answering the question, when did Eretz Yisrael belong to B'nai Yisrael? When did Eretz Yisrael become the property of Eretz Yisrael? Achrei Kibush v'chalukah. Kibush means the physical conquest of the land by Yoshua ben Nun. So if you needed the physical conquest of the land by Yoshua ben Nun, what was Avram Avinu doing in Eretz Yisrael? Why was it such a big deal? Avram Avinu was in Haran. Yes? When God said to him, Lech lecha mi'arzecha, that's what God said to Avram Avinu. Why? Why did Avram Avinu have to go to Eretz Yisrael if Eretz Yisrael only belongs to the children of Avram Avinu after they conquer the land, after the land is conquered by Yeshua ben Nun? So what exactly was Avram Avinu doing, and then Yitzchak, and then Yaakov, and what were they doing? And when Yitzchak wanted to go to Mitzrayim, when there was a famine in the land, God said to Yitzchak, Gur Ba'aretz Hazot, don't go, stay. Well, what was the issue? What was it that he was staying for? And if you ask me, how come Avram Avinu left Eretz Canaan to go to Mitzrayim when there was a famine? How come he didn't depend on God? So Avram Avinu could have said, look, if the land belonged to me, I would certainly stay there. I would know that the promise had actually been fulfilled. But since the land doesn't belong to me, it belongs to all the people who live here. Right, so maybe the promise that, or the protection that God would give me would only take place after the kibush of Eretz Yisrael. But now I'm sort of like just a guest here. I'm not really permanent. I'm not a permanent resident yet. So if there's a famine, I've got to figure out a way to take care of myself. So look at the Ramban. Lefika chachazika kodesh boch with Abraham ba'aretz v'asalo dimyonot v'kol ha'atid le'asot b'zaro v'avein zeh. And therefore, because the DNA was established by Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, right? The DNA was established by them. So the Ramban says, and just look at the words. The Fika Chechazika Kodesh Boch with Avram Ba'aretz. Therefore, God kept Avram Avinu in Eretz Canaan, made him stay there. Vasalo Dimyonot, he did things that you can imagine were going to come up again. Bekol ha'atid le'yasod bezar'o v'havein zeh. That Avram Avinu became, Avram and then Yitzchak and then Yaakov, became the determining factor, in creating Am Yisrael, the way they were. So, in Shechem, what did Shechem represent for Avram Avinu? Why did Avram Avinu go to Shechem? Because Am Yisrael would be proactive. They would do things. They would act on behalf of what they thought was justice. And that's Shimon v'Levi. And even though there's always this possibility, as Yaakov said, you know, you'll get the ire of all the nations against us. They'll all come after us, which did not happen. Yaakov Avinu was wrong. But that's always the situation when the option of going to war exists, right? You never know. You never know how war is going to turn out. You never know how war is going to turn out. Even if it seems to turn out well, it could end up turning out badly. So Avram Avinu went to Shechem. Avram Avinu went to Shechem to take care of a problem, because the people that he was, that the genetic influence of Avram Avinu onto his children and grandchildren was proactive. They would do things. They would make things. They would take things into under control. And therefore, Avram Avinu said that tefillah is going to be helpful. That tefillah is going to be helpful. So now, if I look at Yaakov, and I say, why did Yaakov go to Shechem? After all, the tefillah that we're talking about, the event that the tefillah was supposed to be helpful for, well, that has already taken place. Right? That's, you know, Yaakov go for? I mean, Abraham's tefillah worked for the story of Dinah and Shimon and Levi. Why did Yaakov have to go? So you could say like Yitzchak, where you say, why did Yitzchak want to go? There was a ra'av, there was a famine in the land at the time of Yitzchak. He wanted to go to Egypt. Why did he want to go to Egypt? Because he wanted to go to Egypt because his father went to Egypt. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, Yitzchak followed his father devotedly in everything, including Akedat Yitzchak. So when there was Vayira Ambar, at the time of Yitzchak, so Yitzchak said, my father went. And it was fine. It turned out well. He made money. He had the products. He came back to Eretz Canaan. I'll do this. I'll do the same thing. But Yaakov, so we could say that about Yaakov. We could say Yaakov went to Shechem because Abraham went to Shechem. However, it's not so obvious. But I will tell you a few things that are good to know about Shechem. Shechem, the city of Shechem, which is a very old city in the land of Canaan, as far as we know, it appears in Egyptian documents, you know, that the 20th century BCE, which is pretty old, I think. Shechem. What happened in Shechem? Well, I'll tell you one thing that happened in Shechem. After Shlomo HaMelech died, his son, Rechavam, became king. Yes? Does that... jog your memory a little bit. Shlomo HaMelech, Rechavam. Rechavam was crowned king in the city of Shechem. In the city of Shechem. Just one second. Was crowned king in the city of Shechem. I don't know if I have that pasuk here. Okay, it doesn't matter. You'll believe me. Rechavam was crowned king in the city of Shechem. And it was in the city of Shechem that people came. The city of Shechem is the Nachala, belongs to the Nachala of Ephraim. Right? You remember, I've explained many times, Yerushalayim, the city of Yerushalayim is the halfway mark between the south and the north of Eretz Yisrael. And in the south of Eretz Yisrael, the big tribe is called Yehuda, from Yerushalayim and south. Right? And Yehuda, on the south of the south, is a small tribe called Shimon. And at Yerushalayim is another small tribe called Binyamin. So in the south of Eretz Yisrael, there's Binyamin, Yehuda, and Shimon. And then going north, like Beit El, where Beit El is, that was Ephraim. And on Ephraim, so leading on Ephraim is Manasseh, and those were the big tribes of the north. So Rechavam went to Shechem to be anointed king. And the reason probably that he went to Shechem was because he wanted to make sure that, you know, how do you pick a place where you get anointed? You go to a place where you has to be strengthened in your camp. Since the north and the south were like sort of like shaky, they were always shaky. So Rechavam went to the north, further north, to be established as a king. There the people came to Rechavam and they said, "We can't take it anymore. We pay tremendous taxes. You have to lower the taxes, you have to let us breathe, and you have to..." That's what they said to Rechavam. So Rechavam, who was not a... You know, Rechavam was apparently not a rocket scientist. He said, "What, you think you paid a lot of taxes till now? Now you're really going to pay. Because now we finished the Beit HaMikdash. All I have left is to buy couches for myself." So that's Rechavam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, no, you can't do that, go back. And then they anointed another king, another person, the prophet, whose name was Achiah Shiloni, anointed Yerovam ben Nevat to be the king of the northern part of Israel, which had broken away from Rechavam. So that the breakaway took place in the city of Shechem. I mean, that's what I meant to say. That the breakaway took place in the city of Shechem. You also know that after the Galut of the 10 tribes in 722 BCE by Sancheriv, who was the king of Ashur, they brought a population into the north. They exiled everybody in the north and they brought in another population into the north from Kutim, from the islands in the Mediterranean. And they eventually became known as Samaritans or Shomronim because they lived in the northern part of Eretz Yisrael. The northern part was emptied out of its Jewish population. And instead, there was this non-Jewish population that was brought in. Eventually, this non-Jewish population became the Geirei Arayot, the converts of the lions. There were lions in Eretz Yisrael, in the northern part of the kingdom, who attacked people, and the Samaritans, the Shomronim, who were not Jewish and brought in by Sancheriv to kind of just take up their new lives there. they decided that the reason that the lions are attacking them is because they're not Jews. So they decided that they were Jewish. They didn't convert. They just decided that they would be Jewish and they would act like Jews and do the Jewish thing. And therefore, it was important for them to establish a center of worship. And the center of worship that they established was in Shechem. And they used as points of worship Har Gerizim and Har Eval. And you know that when Yehoshua ben Nun came to Eretz Yisrael, he went immediately to Shechem to fulfill the Torah obligation to do the brachot and the klalot on Gerizim and Har Eval. So that Shechem was the Shechem was throughout history the focal point of division, of divisiveness, the divisiveness with Dinah in the lifetime of Yaakov, and then the Samaritans, and then, I'm sorry, then first...
Yosef.
We'll get to Yosef in a second. Yosef is on the sheet, thankfully. So...
the whole problem with the brothers started in Shechem.
Well... That's also true. That's also true. And in other words, Yaakov sent Yosef to find his brothers. And where did he send them to? Well, he said, just go find them. They were on their way to Shechem. And the Pasuk says they were in a place called Dotaina, which is next to Shechem. And there was the terrible division between Yosef and his brothers actually took place. But more interestingly, if you look at the second source on the page, in Yehoshua Perikav Dalet Pasuk Lamed Vet, it says that Atzmot Yosef Ashalu B'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim. You remember that Yosef made them promise that they would bring his bones out of Mitzrayim and bury them in Eretz Yisrael. So that took place. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu lived up to that promise. So at Atzmot Yosef Ashalu B'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim Kavru B'Shechem. I'll say it again. Kavru B'Shechem. They buried in Shechem, right? B'chelkat HaSadeh Asher Kana Yaakov Me'et B'nei Chamor Avi Shechem B'Meyak Sita V'ayu L'Bnei Yosef Nachala. So Avram Avinu had to buy a nachalah in Eretz Canaan in order to bury his wife, or that he would have a place to bury his wife. Again, Yaakov Avinu, following Avram Avinu, following his grandfather, bought land in Shechem in order to have, I mean, we didn't say for what purpose, but when the Jews took out Moshe Yosef out of Mitzrayim and brought the Atzamot to Eretz Canaan, they brought them to the place that Yaakov had purchased, as though everybody knew that that was the reason. That was the reason that Yaakov purchased the land. Now Yaakov has his own story with Eretz Canaan and being buried in Eretz Canaan, but he insisted on being buried right when he died. He died, so Yosef and the brothers took the body to Eretz Yisrael and buried him in the Maarat HaMachpelah. But Yosef was buried for some reason in Shechem. Yosef was buried in Shechem. It could be because the story started in Shechem. The Yosef story started in Shechem. Yosef became Yosef in Shechem. It was, who was Yosef? He was the king. He became separate from his brothers. He was an independent actor. So all of that is what we see. With Shechem and Yosef being buried in Shechem, and the difficulties that emanated from Shechem. And I don't want to say that nothing has changed in our times, but somebody could say it. Somebody could say it. Somebody probably has.
Nothing has changed.
Or that nothing changes. Oh, yeah, somebody said it. Very good. Okay. If you look on the second page, again, I have it highlighted in my copy here. The second page, the continuation of the Ramban, the first line in the middle. You see, there's a period. And then it says, "V'ani mosif." I want to tell you further. He held on to that place in Eretz Yisrael. That just like Avram Avinu was able to capture some of Eretz Yisrael, he bought it, or he was able to capture a little bit of Eretz Yisrael before he actually had the rights to it. Der Mazlo Mizeh, the second line, Ki Banav Yichbeshu Amakom Ahu Tchila Kodem Heyotam Zochim Ba Vekodem Heyot Avon Yoshev Aret Shalem Laglotam Misham. And so Avram Avinu conquered the land. He conquered a piece of Eretz Yisrael, even though the time had not yet come for conquest. Because as all the Rishonim say, conquest would only, it was actually a punishment. It was a punishment of the people who lived in Eretz Canaan. But that punishment only came at the end of the 200 years of slavery of the Jews in Mitzrayim. It hadn't come yet. And yet, Avram Avinu, as a kind of a prototypical person, like he's acting out the future. He's acting out what will be in the future. So he did that. He did that by buying land in Eretz Yisrael. And this is repeated by Yaakov. If you look at the first source, right, Pasuk Yotet, Vayiken, that's the word kana. Vayiken, he bought at Chelkat HaSadeh Asher Natan Sham Ohalo Miyad B'nei Chamor Avishchem B'nei Aksita. Right, he bought it. The Torah emphasizes. So he and Avram Avinu were the same. Avram Avinu buried his wife. Yaakov did not bury Yosef in that place. However, he caused, but by his own desire to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, he caused the burial of Yosef to take place in the Chelka, which he purchased at that time. Right? The last pasuk, Vayitzev Shem Mizbeach, Vayikra Lo, Kel Elokei Yisrael. He made a Mizbeach. He made a Mizbeach. And a Mizbeach meant that Avram Avinu and Yaakov, they built Mizbechot on the place that God appeared to them. And that was a Mizbeach. A Mizbeach was not a place of sacrifice, or not yet a place of sacrifice, but it was a place which we designated an event. Something happened. And we designated it by a Mizbeach. And even though God could appear to people any place in Eretz Canaan, it was noteworthy to the Avot. The Avot felt it was important to make some way of recognizing the place that God originally appeared to Bnei Israel. So you see that Yaakov and Avraham had certain similarities. Those similarities are connected to the place called Shechem. Shechem is connected to the ongoing argument that we have internally about who we are and what we should be doing and which parts of Eretz Yisrael are really real and which parts could be abandoned if only temporarily, right? We have this argument, and the difficulty with the argument is that everybody is so sure of themselves that there really isn't much to talk about, and that's always bad, at least in my opinion. I think it's always better if you could have a conversation than if you can't have a conversation. But who am I to say? All the best.